This is the Living Clean Podcast. This podcast is not meant to replace meetings, sponsorship, step work, or service. This podcast is meant to be another tool in your recovery toolbox. Our guests are here to share their experience, strength, and hope with recovery through Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you for joining us. All right, welcome back to the Living Clean Podcast. I'm Mason, I'm an addict. We're back for another Living Clean study. Francis has helped me collect three new guests for this Living Clean study. We're gonna start with our introductions now. I will start with my co-host, Francis.
Francis Addict, 122292. Home group is the Willows Basic Recovery Group in Willows, California.
All right. Thank you, Francis. Let's go with Gil next.
Hi there. My name is Gil P. My home group of clean date is July 6, 1992. My home group is Hope in the Slope in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
Fantastic. Tracy.
My name is Tracy W. My clean date is November 15th of 1992. My home group is the Monday night 6 p.m. meditation meeting and spiritual principles based in Eugene, Oregon.
Wonderful. And last but certainly not least, Richard.
I'm an addict. My name is Richard. My clean date is August 1st, 2013. And my current home group is in Bullhead City, Arizona, Just for Today group. We meet at 7 p.m.
Fantastic. Thank you all so much for participating. We're going to kick off with Francis reading the first paragraph, and then we'll go from there.
We can be much more comfortable in an old rut than on a new plateau. We usually don't notice that we're stuck until we have been there for a while, and by then it's hard to break free. We have to be willing to be uncomfortable if we don't want to stay stuck. Trying something new can be its own surrender. It can be very difficult to allow ourselves to experience our freedom. As an addict, I'm a creature of habit, said one member. The third time I'm in a restaurant, I order the usual. Our comfort with habits makes it easy to stay in a routine. Fear of the disease sometimes makes us afraid to step too far out on a limb, lest we find ourselves in danger trying out new perspectives.
Ooh, sorry.
Trying out new perspectives, new beliefs, and new experiences can all be part of a living spiritually. I've found myself in old ruts, and you know, like, and I've like had to do something, you know, like whatever that is. Like sometimes it's recommitting to service, or recommitting to step work. It could be any number of things. I do like to experience new things in Narcotics Anonymous. I was given the opportunity to go into San Quentin Prison to do, and I haven't been doing H&I for a while, and especially in a correctional facility. So Friday, me and some guys went down to San Quentin and got to go in and carry the message, and it was an amazing experience. And we picked a restaurant genre that we had never had before. We had Puerto Rican food. Has nothing to do with today's politics. It just randomly picked Puerto Rican. But it was, you know, like it was just the greatest, time. And like, and I was way out of my comfort zone. But you know, like I got to go in with two other people that hadn't done H&I in San Quentin before. And it was a super powerful experience. So, I also do like new experiences. I'm always trying to figure out what the new thing is in NA, you know, like the new book, you know, like what are the issue discussion topics, you know, like that are on the website. I don't want to be left behind. Like that's part of like being old is like, I'm like, oh no, they're not going to get ahead of me. Like I have the wisdom to know the difference. I know where to find where the new material is. I'm going to get the approval draft. I'm going to like stay ahead of these newcomers. So that's all I have on that paragraph. Thanks.
Thank you, Francis. Stay unmuted for a second, Francis. I want to ask you a quick question. You other guys and gals, feel free to weigh in on this too. Why do you think it is so comfortable staying in a new rut rather than stepping out of that comfort zone and trying something new?
I think that, like it says we're kind of creatures of habit, and like we kind of fall into like a routine for our recovery, and we, like w this is how it was when I got clean, and so this is how it's supposed to be, and so a lot of times we'll kind of fall into like some closed-mindedness about our routine, but like I don't know if that's what group conscience is, but I believe group conscious changes, like the consciousness of Narcotics Anonymous changes, and there's always new ideas happening, and they're like I think I have a bright idea, but it hasn't been like it's not a new idea. It's something it's always been thought of up before I get it. Like it's just a recycled new idea. So like because I just because I grab it out of the consciousness of Narcotics Anonymous doesn't mean it's mine. So.
Yeah. And I guess one more follow-up to that would be, do you notice patterns of routines that you had when you first got clean that were very beneficial to you that needed to change in order for you to grow?
There was a pattern I had when I was new where I was really, really engaged in the literature and doing book studies, and like it allowed me to like I got clean when I was 25, class of 92, you guys. I'm like, yes. But so what that was, what it was it really allowed me to know where a lot of the information is in the basic text and the It Works How and Why. And now, like I'm back into book studies. There's a book study here with Living Clean, but I'm also doing a book study on Tuesday and Thursday mornings with people in NA from 6:30 a.m. in the morning to 7:30, that's been great, and it's like something that's new, but it was something I was doing early in recovery too. It's like getting back engaged in the study of the literature. So, hope that
Yeah.
answered your question.
Yeah, I promise I'm done now. Okay, we're going to move on. Gil, I think you're going to take the next paragraph for us.
Sure enough. Okay, our certainty can keep us from the humility we so desperately need. Our open-mindedness is a cornerstone of our recovery, and that includes being open-minded about our own program. When we stop being teachable, we are in trouble. Too often we create barriers where guideposts are more appropriate. When we build walls instead of pathways, we don't just keep new possibilities out. We lock ourselves into old ways of seeing and thinking about the world. It is easy to get caught in our own trap this way. When we finally find some relief, we want to hold on to it. As that relief grows into joy and gratitude, it becomes more precious to us. We can be so afraid to lose what we have, to lose what we have gained, that we hold ourselves back from growth. Let's see what comes up. Certainly in my earlier recovery, I thought I knew something. As a matter of fact, I thought I knew everything. I took on what I was taught as gospel and unchangeable, very much like the preceding paragraph. I was in a rut in recovery with a closed-minded. I wasn't teachable. In my home group, the newer members who were just coming in wanted to add a key tag thing in our secretary's report, which our group, since I've been there, didn't have. With the intention of having more sharing time. So I was hackled. No, we can't do that. It was always done this way. And I fought that for a while until this book came out, Living Clean. And there's a section in there about people who have been here for a while to allow the newer members to morph this program in their way. And I read that and I got touched by it, and I voted for the key tags in the next business meeting, and I practiced a piece of humility. Like, I didn't know everything, and I allowed love to come in to allow this book to come alive. I got that one.
All right. Thank you, Gil.
Yes.
All right. I don't see any hands up, so we will roll on. Tracy, you're up.
Okay. Because we may believe there is only one way for NA to work, and that's the way it has worked for us so far. When a certain practice or way of being has saved our lives, we may refuse to deviate from it. That grit and resolve can save our lives, and it can also really be useful when we are carrying the message as well. But with that hard edge comes the risk that we will simply become stubborn and close-minded, excluding members who don't do it the way we do. When we think we know exactly what the program has to offer, we don't leave room for it to grow or for us to continue to grow within it. Even worse, when the time comes that we need something more, we have convinced ourselves that it won't be available through NA. Our willingness to share our ongoing experience in recovery helps our groups to experience the same growth and renewal that we do as individuals. What a perfect paragraph for me. Oh, goodness. So I'd like to say when I was new, but I'm just going to say like now. Right now. You know, I moved to Eugene, Oregon a few years ago, and it was during the pandemic, you know, and so we were meeting online. And then we started to meet in person, and I had a lot of fear about going back to in-person meetings, and I had a story in my head. And then they weren't going to do the meetings the way we used to do in Northern California. I mean, I had a story. I was playing it up. Right. And there were some hard edges. I had some hard edges that quickly became soft edges for me when I came into the room of Narcotics Anonymous here locally. And it helped me to welcome those that were new the way that I was welcomed. You know, it helped me to give back in the way that I had been given love when I first came through the doors. I didn't feel a part of, I didn't feel as welcomed, but the reality is, I was reminded by my sponsor in the steps of Narcotics Anonymous that I was in and working at the time and still am today, that what I need is a Narcotics Anonymous. It is available to us all. And that for me, the diversity is our strength, and that I can be really useful when carrying a message of Narcotics Anonymous, that I have something to offer. Whether I got clean in this area or I get clean someplace else, I have something to offer. And then the humility that comes with that is that others have something to offer me, to keep my heart and my mind and my, you know, they used to say when I was new, like, bring the body, bring the mind, the body will follow, or, you know, sit on your hands. Don't leave your chair from prayer to prayer, right? And I don't know, for me, my ongoing willingness to share my experience in recovery helps me grow. It helps me feel a part of, it helps me feel grounded. It helps me feel like I'm in the meeting with everyone else. And I need that as an addict. I need to feel that as a recovering addict, regardless of how long I've been here. And I'll finish with this. I really appreciate that that practice and way of life that has served me. It keeps expanding and growing as I'll say this. Last year, I finished a round of 12 steps, and it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. So when I met step one again with my sponsor, she said, you are spiritually awakened. I hope you greet the steps in a new way with an open heart. So NA still works for me. You know, this is still, it's saving my life every single time I read the literature. And And with my hard edges, I can love myself. As long as I'm not putting up, like the previous paragraphs, I'm not putting up a wall or a barrier on myself, that I can just see that, oh, it's just a fence and the fence has holes in it, just like me. This is exactly where I'm supposed to be. And, as groups and individuals, Narcotics Anonymous works. That's what I've got for that. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Tracy. All right, Francis.
Yeah, so the first part of this where it was saying we may believe there's only one way for NA to work, and that's the way it has worked for us so far. When a certain practice or way has been saved our lives, we may refuse to deviate from it. I really kind of thought about the pandemic and like the whole fellowship moving to Zoom. And there were kind of like groups that moved to Zoom and tried to like recapture the magic and the format of the in-person meetings, and those meetings didn't do very well. I don't think they did. There was also the kind of like a group of people that were like, F Zoom, we're not going to do that. We're going to meet in the park. This is the way it's always been. And we don't care what about like what everybody says about this thing. We're doing what we do. But then there were like a lot of people and groups that became creative in how they presented Narcotics Anonymous. And I think those were the groups that thrived during the pandemic. And so I was involved with a group called the Paradise Strong Book Study. It meets in person now on Tuesday nights in Paradise. But when we were on Zoom, we did a bunch of history stuff. And we had the authors from the basic text come in after we read their stories, or we presented different, like we had Bo S. come and share about the writing of the basic text. And it didn't get a lot of support locally, but we got a lot of people from all over the country coming in to hear the history of NA. And I think that was like getting out of the old rut, this is how it's supposed to be, and like just moving with the spirit of what the rest of the fellowship was doing on Zoom. And so like kudos to open-mindedness and willingness during the pandemic for groups to recreate themselves. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Francis. Gil.
Okay, thank you. What came up for me was I remembered that particular incident about the key tags, and it made me think about business meetings that this alluded to. I think I thought I knew the agenda that the group should be practicing, as per my opinion. And then it struck me, and this is years into recovery, it gets greater later, more gets revealed. It struck me that the tradition suggests there's a difference between group opinion and group conscience. And that in order to really satisfy the group conscience, there needs to be a personal prayer. Each individual needs to get with themselves and their higher power to listen to the innards, the higher self, for their own direction, so they can help direct the group, And it wasn't until I prayed about the key tags that I remembered that paragraph that allowed it in to begin with. That allowed it. It was a seed that I read that got watered by God, and I got to use prayer to realign my whole psyche. So that's what I got for that.
Thank you, Gil. Richard.
Addict Richard. So what I got from that paragraph was, creative action of the spirit, finding creative ways as members to serve our fellowship is what like fans the desire, to recover for different generations, But I also feel it's important, as it said in the literature, is to, it's connected to our traditions, right? And our autonomy, right? We're autonomous as individuals, we're autonomous as home group members. However, it does affect NA as a whole, and this could come across in how we share our message. And how we serve is a reflection of how we carry the message and how we share the message. But the autonomy piece, for me personally is it's becoming myself, you know. It's be learning how to become myself despite what my home, even a group conscience. During the pandemic, our group conscience, was changed. It was our service structure was changed. I remember starting a particular meeting with a group, and my sponsor was like, "Yeah, this will never work." My friends were like, "They're like, yeah, you're overextending yourself. This is not the greatest idea. This is not what we do in Narcotics Anonymous." A lot of my predecessors from the area I was in, they're like, "This is not how we do it." And I knew I was in alignment with spiritual principles, but it was kind of like, self-acceptance came into play because I trusted my conscious contact with my higher power. And despite, my friends and my sponsorship family and a lot of the predecessors that I really respected, they weren't on board with what I was doing. But something in me, my autonomy, my self-acceptance that I had learned through a spiritual awakening of the 12 steps helped me to trust that. And that altered what the group conscience became. I don't even know what I'm saying right now, but so I guess what I'm saying is creative action of the spirit and a level of self-acceptance can help us gain a wider perspective or open-minded perspective with the traditions in mind, of course, but we can kind of integrate those two, because when I came into Narcotics Anonymous, there was a rigid way, and I was taught this, and this is the way you did it, and I stayed there because that was what was safe for me. But as we know, in order for our fellowship to grow, we got to do things that are not safe. And I think the pandemic helped us to, grow some wings in that area. But yeah.
Thank you for that, Richard. It's so refreshing to hear you share some of that. I had similar feedback when the idea of starting this podcast came along. That'll never work. We don't do it that way. But I think even bound by the traditions, there are an infinite amount of ways to carry the message. And I think for us to reach the attic in the future, we got to be open to that. And it's that creative action of the spirit. My job is just to work on me as an individual, work my own program, and then follow what God puts on my heart. That's why we're here today. The idea of this podcast was, it was a feeling that I got that I thought was, inaccurate at first, and then it just kept coming. It kept being put placed on my heart. Then the doors opened, Like I didn't have a clue on how to even start a podcast or how to edit or how to do any of that. But all those doors sort of open, So I agree completely that creative action of the spirit. Richard, you can go ahead. Oh, go ahead, Francis.
Well, it's like I try to get a little bit ahead of ourselves in the sections, and so we're about to finish this section, but two away from this is creative action of the spirit. You're like the next one is conscious contact, and then creative action of the spirit. And I was kind of thinking, Mason and I have been doing a bunch of work on NA history, right? And he keeps telling me about like how he had this bright idea about starting a podcast. And we're doing this history, and we're about to enter into like Jim Miller's bright idea about starting a magazine, and called the NA Way magazine. And he was inspired by this, like he was a part of this literature movement of writing the basic text, and like what is the next piece to do after writing this basic text? And it's like, oh, we need to have a nice newsletter for Narcotics Anonymous. And like, and he did whatever it took because he had like this inspired idea to carry the message. And the pandemic shut down the NA Way magazine. Like it went from 1982 all the way up to 2022, the NA Way magazine. But now we have all these different versions of carrying the message, including the Living Clean podcast and different NA groups that are meeting on the Zoom platform. And so, like, fuck yeah. Oh, for the creative action of the spirit. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Francis. All right, Richard, if you would you mind reading the next paragraph and making some comments?
Sure, I'm an addict named Richard. I believe, oh, we have many beginnings throughout our recovery. Early on, we learn that we can begin our day again at any time. As we progress, we learn that we can always begin a new journey in recovery, and we can start over wherever we need to. We don't need to blow up our lives to get a fresh start. We may think we are done when, in fact, we are just getting started. When NA has given us all we have asked for, that's the beginning of a new story for us, a new chapter. The achievement of our goals is a new beginning of our journey. And as the journey continues, we feel that we will need all of the tools we have been given. Just because we've used them already doesn't mean it's time to turn them in. So guess what I'm getting, the new beginnings, the analogy that they're using in our literature of new beginnings, and I don't know where I guess where I'm tapping into at this moment is like, this podcast where Francis was during the pandemic. And I really want to, extend my gratitude for you both to step out on a limb, as far as service and do something different. And I was really excited when I was invited to the history meeting during the pandemic, as well as this one, because I do believe it's a new beginning for Narcotics Anonymous. It is based in our traditions. It is based in the foundation. So our fellowship was founded on going out on a limb, right? And I think that spirit of Jimmy Cade to do that and with Bob Barrett was, essential. And what's interesting is when I used to pray every morning during the pandemic, with fear and uncertainty in my heart, and pray with 1,000 addicts in the morning in a 5-minute moment of silence, I used to feel, and it would come to me, I used to feel the spirit of Jimmy Kay and Bob Barrett. I used to feel our predecessors. I used to feel Pepe. I used to feel that energy. And I would pray with our fellowship, with everyone disconnected, and we were connected through the hearts, even through a screen. So it was a new way for me to connect with our fellowship that I hadn't ever done. I couldn't, I wouldn't say that I couldn't, but I wasn't comfortable with even sharing in my home group prior to the pandemic. And then the pandemic connected me to the worldwide fellowship. And it was a new beginning for me to find, some self-acceptance, and was asked to share in a lot of places, which brought me to myself. And that's when I really, really got a conscious contact with our fellowship. And which was a new beginning for me and my life. It changed the trajectory of what is a meaningful life to me, what I do for a living. Everything I do today is a direct result of contact with our fellowship during that troubling time. When I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I was, in fear. And at that point during the pandemic, I was in fear. And Narcotics Anonymous transforms that fear into inspiration and gave me a new beginning to serve, not just our fellowship, but society. I serve all populations of our society today as a direct result of service to Narcotics Anonymous. So, the new beginnings of how I relate with my family, with our pyramid, right? My, point of freedom is expanded in a way that, I can't even express in words. And it's constantly evolving through service. This weekend, recently, I've been engaged with, prison liaison H&I. And it's beautiful that I'm able to bring prisons into our conventions, and so they can participate on a Sunday night speaker and to do what we're doing here. And just to see our fellowship evolve, it's a beautiful privilege to be a part of this change in our fellowship.
All right. Thank you so much, Richard. And that ends our portion of the book study today. I'm going to kick it over to Francis. And we have this unique opportunity here that's presented us today. So Francis kind of had an idea. I'm going to kick it over to him and he can explain.
Yeah, normally we kind of go through this book study and we roll right into the next section, seamlessly. And I saw the title of the next section, which is Conscious Contact. And so like my idea was maybe to invite some of the people that were like founders of the meeting, Conscious Contact. That is on the Zoom platform. I have sponsees that log in every morning and listen to the Conscious Contact meeting. And it was like what I know is that it was a part of that creative action of the spirit that happened during the pandemic. And like during the pandemic, I would log on to that meeting and it was scary big. Like there were like well over 1,000 people in the meeting logging in, like a meditation meeting on Zoom. I'm like, that's this is you like we're presenting history on this platform. This is historic. Like the Conscious Contact meeting was something really special that happened during the pandemic and is continuing to happen over the Zoom platform every morning. So it was this was like an opportunity to kind of mix the book study in with a little bit of history in introducing the next section of our book study, but also introducing the people that brought us Conscious Contact. So I think maybe we'll call on Richard and maybe he can direct some of the discussion around how we got started with this. You're muted.
Oh, I'm an addict named Richard. Well, it wasn't me, or even I don't believe it was me at all. I was just an instrument of the group conscience of Narcotics Anonymous, of the our predecessors who wrote our literature. And I guess what I heard it earlier, I heard you share it. You were tapping into the consciousness of Narcotics Anonymous. And that's essentially what I did in a time of fear. I'll tell a little story. This is basically how it happened. I was at the last meeting, live meeting of, before we went into the pandemic and they shut everything down. And I was sitting around a diner with all my sponsees. And we were talking about this is our last meeting for a while. We're going virtual on the virtual platform. And after the sponsorship meeting, the guys were picking up toilet paper and all these supplies. They were in fear of a world without toilet paper. And after dinner, there was a sporting goods next door, right? And my sponsees were going there to pick up ammo, right? And somehow I found myself in a sporting goods with a handful of ammo, and I don't own a gun. So I'm walking out with some of my sponsees who are good old boys, and you got to protect your family, this and that, the world's ending. And it dawned on me that, at the time I was on a second step, and I was looking at the insanity of our fear and the fear that was going on in the world and the insanity of the fear that I was experiencing, right? And so, I went home and I gave my sponsor a call, and we were just laughing as we are now about the insanity of the fear of our disease, right? And I told him, and he was laughing. He goes, "You're the guy on the pillow, not with a gun." So, I set down my ammo on this pillow, and I just sat down for a minute, and I was like, "Wow, this is wild." So, the home group decided to go virtual, so we had to learn how to do that on this platform, right? And so I went through all the challenges of learning how to do that, and then my home group dumped me for some newcomer who didn't stay, and I still have a little bit of resentment. But it was how NA was, I mean, this NA meeting was born. So he was a tech guy, and they gave him the position, and he wasn't even in our home group, right? And so I was like, okay, whatever. And so I had this platform receipt on my desk, and I had done an 11 step with one of my sponsees as well. And that some of that step work was on my desk, and my second step stuff was on my desk. And so after getting off the conversation with my sponsor about the insanity, I do what we do. I sat in 11 step. I do it every morning. So I just sat with my fear. And after I got up to have a sip of coffee, I saw the receipt from this platform that wasn't being used. I saw the insanity of my second step notes. And then I looked over at my sponsee's step work, and it said conscious contact in the literature. And that's how it just happened. It just hit me in that moment that that's how a loving higher power wants me to serve this fellowship, because if I'm in fear, everyone else must be in fear. And what's my solution? My solution is always the 11th step, how I restored, through a second step and an 11th step, to be present with my fear, to be present with spiritual principles, to be present with the fellowship. And so I called my sponsor, and I was inspired to do this. And as I said earlier, no one was on board. But a loving higher power inspired me to move forward on it, and I did. And I wrote up a format, and I ran it by my sponsor, ran it by three other of my predecessors to try to get a group conscience. But to be honest, the group conscience was not with me, so this was full on self-will. I did it anyway, and I started it with just a few of us. There was like 3 to 7 of us, and Ron, who was unable to be here today because he works, but we started it off, and Tracy and Gil were some of the first people that I met in this group. And as the group grew, even though we were isolated, I was connected through their spirit, and I was attracted to their spirit. And as the meeting would grow from 100 to 500 to 1,000, the atmosphere of recovery was palpable. Even though we were all isolated in a room, you could cut it with a knife. And two of those vehicles of the atmosphere of recovery that I felt on a daily basis were Gil and Tracy. Their energy, their presence, they embodied the spiritual principles of our program, and it came through their voice. And I didn't know them. I had so I would just, something in me was drawn to them, and I would randomly go through and pray for each person during the meeting. Throughout the meeting, I would go through each box and then say a prayer for them. And I was connected to Gil and Tracy on a deep level, and I haven't even met them. We didn't have a discussion, so I just randomly got their numbers and called them, and I said, "This is the energy that a loving higher power has instructed to me to bring to our atmosphere of recovery, and I'd like you to join on." And maybe I'll let them share about their experience with coming on, being the first service members of Narcotics Anonymous. How about you, Tracy? Would you like to share first?
Thank you, Richard. I'm Tracy. I'm an addict. I love that. I love that awakening. I love that process of going back when there was so much fear in the world, so much fear of shutting down, so much unknown. And I don't take any credit. It was like I was guided by a power greater than myself to log on to this meeting. I mean, I was like penciling down the number. I remember penciling down the number and logging on and seeing you with a few other folks. And much like what you said, it was palpable. I felt an immediate connection, an immediate connection. And I knew that was a power greater than myself. I just knew it. I wanted to be able to I had this tactile feel for it, but I was feeling it on my heart. I was leaking from my eyes. It felt safe. It felt like I br could breathe in a world that I just felt like most of the time I had a clenching around my throat. And in that space, I didn't feel that way. In that space, I felt like these are the people, these are my fellows in Narcotics Anonymous. This is it. And I'll never forget when you called. Because I was just showing up. And occasionally I'd do a reading and then I'd be really quiet. You know, I didn't really want to be seen or heard. You know how that goes. You know how that goes. It just gets transformed. It gets changed. You know, I was in so much ease. Remember Richard saying, you know, there's just, you have this presence. And I'm thinking, I kind of looked behind me. I'm like, who are you talking about? You're not talking about me. And you said, no, I am. And would you join? And I was just humbled, just honored to be in service, of service to a meeting that like li literally changed my life. And I say that because I'd been looking for some life-changing experiences. I got to be honest. You know, I had been in a process of prayer and meditation for a while, but about 3 months before the world shut down, I had abandoned the meditation and prayer. I just got up and I walked away. And I can't even tell you what it was about. I look back and I can't even tell you what it was about. But all of a sudden, I was, like you said, I was back on the cushion, closing my eyes, saying the serenity prayer, listening to the format being read, sitting with all of you in this 5-minute meditation that felt like we were in an auditorium. All of us. I mean, the energy was magnetic. I mean, I can't even like describe. I have chills up and down my arms and in my hair right now because it was magnetic. And I was like, this is the best hit of the day. Just remember, if I'm going in, this is the one I want. This is a good hit, you know? And it was the spiritual hit that I needed. It just was. It was a thing that I was looking for, and I didn't even know I was looking for it, right? And I'll say this, like you described, Richard's like, you know, we'd welcome in people, we'd let them in the room, you know, we'd have different people share on their experience of step 11, and it was so beautiful because we were getting people from all around the world talking about their relationship with a power greater than themselves. And I was like, where would this happen unless I flew on a plane to a world convention, which I don't have a passport that allows me to do that. So the fact that I get to do that here with all of you, it was beautiful. And this inclusivity, I felt that for the first time, like the depth of inclusivity. And the depth of our diversity being our strength, like that's where I felt it. And I don't know, at one point I looked down and I was like, I remember typing in the chat to you and Gil. I'm like, is it really 1,000 people in this room? Like, what the hell? Can I turn my video off now? This is a lot. And I think you both just said, close your eyes, breathe, and be in the experience. And when I allowed myself to be in the experience, it was palpable, just like it is right now. There's a power greater than ourselves that's happening right now with five of us. And so I don't really doubt it today that the steps are working in my life, or this magic that happened through Richard, this feeling that he got, and then he just went with it. Like, that is courageous. That's courageous. And so let me just say this. The day that I joined was March 17th, and the reading for just for today was True Courage. And it says, I will be courageous today. When I'm afraid, I'll do what I need to do to grow in my recovery. That's when I joined. So if that's not a power greater than myself, like, I don't know what is, and I don't need to know what is, but I'm so grateful I was invited to be a part of the journey and to be part of this today. So thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. Gil.
My. Oh yeah, I feel you. I feel you. I feel you. I have so much to say. I feel. I'm so grateful that Richard was practicing some willfulness in those days, and didn't take suggestions. I could look at it like that, or as I choose to look at it, that he was divinely inspired, is what I think happened. Through all the "you shouldn't do this," he knew. He had a sense, I need to do this. Courageous action, whatever you want to call it, he followed his heart, and I believe his heart was directed to start this thing going. Yeah, I got introduced to the group because Richard asked me to share there. I was one of those people who asked to share. So this is the first time, I had meditation on the shelf that I was going to come back to at some point in my recovery, because I really didn't do what's necessary and really practice the ritual, which of course, the word is embedded in the spiritual. So the disease had me separated from, I had a phone to God. When I finished my conversation with God, I hung the phone up. I wasn't open to hear any kind of direction from my higher self. Until I went to that meeting and I got introduced to 5 minutes of meditation. And I liked what I felt the very first time. The first one was free. Well, I was hooked. I came back the second time because it was a warm feel. The camaraderie, the unity of purpose. We're going to save our lives. Everybody's dying out there, and we will die without what we have. I was not comfortable. I told myself this is not going to work for me. It's impersonal, and all the things that people my age in those days would tell themselves. For me, my truth was, and through meditation, I discovered that I had fear of not being successful technologically. So that kept me from wanting to show up here and believing the lie that it's not a good thing. But I got past that because of the love in the room. And I remember when we talked about Richard was exhausted. I think it was maybe it was 8 months is what I remember. Every day, 8 months, he did this. Got speakers, all of it. He said, "I'm tired, Gil, tired." And we talked about, a change of guard. I don't know if Tracy came first or I came first, but I know Richard and I had a conversation that Tracy has the appropriate vibe. Everybody complimented before Richard stepped away. Richard's voice, Richard's voice. I could listen to Richard's voice for 9 hours, that kind of thing. Richard, you should sell your voice and whatever. So Tracy was a natural. She was the female version of Richard's voice in that it was calming. In that it was serene, it was about love. And as a matter of fact, in our format, I'm still involved with conscious contact very much 7 days a week, because I'm still feeling the joy, I'm still feeling the gratitude that I need to pay back. That place that changed my life as well. Even in our format, we talk about inclusivity. What am I going to say? Yeah, so it was 1,000 meetings, 1,000 members a day, for a period of months until the pandemic lightened up and live meetings started to happen. So now we're down to 600 to 650 a day. It's still a convention every single day. It's still a, I go to live conventions. I just came back from one. I saw Tawanda. She says hello to you too. And conscious contact is so exposed that I couldn't walk past four people before somebody walked up to me. Conscious contact. My face is known. So this meeting is historic. Conscious contact became historic. It was the first one of its kind that was more than 25 people. You know what I mean? And by an exaggerated amount. And the way the vibe that Tracy was talking about is still palpable. It's not a chaotic, technologically chaotic, distracting kind of atmosphere. It's pretty tight. My life certainly changed by being introduced to what meditation is really about. I was able to get out of my own way to let a power greater than myself speak back to me and direct me to character building directions that I get to enjoy a day at a time. When I'm upset, I've learned, like I'm playing a part in this. Let me discover what defect is trying to ravage me, and I'll sit. And I'll the first thing I'll do, like the literature suggests, is I'll stop and I'll breathe. And in that, I invite a power greater than me to quell my riot, because I trust there is a power that will quell my riot. So in letting it in, I'm already in the solution. It's a surrender and a statement to I'm in the wrong place. And I got that through prayer and meditation because I became a member of conscious contact. So I feel like crying. At how marvelous this change has been, and that this change is, and how I still walk with the benefits of this change, and how I can get to help other people. I found my direction and my purpose, and it's certainly that. It's certainly being of love and not of, competition and fear and all that stuff. And it made me feel at this point in my life alive while I'm living. And that wasn't the case for a long time in recovery. I was still, you guys told me to act as if, and that's what I was doing. I was doing what you guys suggested I do, but I was acting. It wasn't on my heart yet. But it wasn't until I stopped and I sat and I let the powers that be come into me and teach me how to live life. And I'm living life beyond my wildest dreams. And what I mean by that is I never could have designed wanting to be the man I want to be today. So I'm really whole and filled because of this meeting. So I'm indebted to you and your willfulness, Richard. Thank you.
Thank you all so much. Wow. Francis, you knocked it out of the park with this idea. Thank y'all so much for participating and sharing that with us. Richard, would one of you like to share the information on how to get involved with the Conscious Contact meeting? So people listening, I'm sure that's the next thing they'll want to know after hearing you three speak is
I'll
where
give
do
the
I
numbers.
find
I'll put
this?
the numbers in the chat if you like.
Okay, put the numbers in the chat and I will post a link to the meeting in the description of this episode. So once you finish up with this episode, just go to the description and whatever platform you're listening to, and there'll be a link there for the Conscious Contact meeting.
I believe as well, if you guys want a visual, I think we have the original poster. It's in my notes, and we can share it on screen. Maybe I could
I
send it
think
to you guys after
we
the
could do that,
podcast.
or Mason, I can send it to you, the flyer he's talking about.
Yeah, send me the flyer, and we will post the flyer on the Living Clean podcast website and on our personal Facebook pages too. So we will do
Put
that.
your number in the chat, Mason, for me.
Sure will. Sure will. Well, folks, I think that wraps it all up. So we've got a beautiful transition into the section of the Living Clean study, which is going to be Conscious Contact, starting next week. So thank you all for joining us, and we will see y'all then.
Thank you for joining us on our Living Clean podcast. This is another platform that we can share our message of recovery, which is an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Join that no matter what club. You can contact us through text. The number is 931-306-9364.